In this episode, we're pulling back the curtain on what really happens in a divorce courtroom. The strategy, the stakes, and the surprising truths that can make or break your case. If you're wondering whether to settle or fight, this one's for you.
Welcome to Women Winning Divorce, the podcast helping successful women navigate divorce with dignity so you can protect yourself, your children, and your assets. I'm Heather Quick, founding attorney at Florida Women's Law Group, where women win at life.
This week, we had Megan Fried on the show, and we had a great conversation about what actually happens in a divorce trial. I hope this episode is valuable to anyone who might be listening. Stay tuned for the full episode. Welcome to this week's episode of Women Winning Divorce. I'm Heather Quick, owner and attorney at Florida Women's Law Group. Today, Megan Fried is joining us. Megan is managing co-partner of Fried Marcroft, a Connecticut law firm that devotes its practice exclusively to divorce and family law. Today, Megan and I will be discussing what actually happens in a divorce trial, how to prepare emotionally and strategically, and how women can stay empowered in one of the most intimidating phases of the legal process. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me, Heather. I am so happy to be back.
Well, I am so happy to have you back. And for our listeners, Megan has been on before, and that is what is wonderful, to have different things to talk about. And she's one of my favorites because a great lawyer, and I love talking to lawyers because I'm a legal nerd, so I love talking about this stuff. So anyway, thank you for joining us, Megan. And for our listeners, though, will you share a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. So right now, my wife, Kristen, and I founded and run Fried Marcroft, which is a Connecticut law firm that only does divorce and family law. We built Fried Marcroft on the idea that divorce isn't really an end. And I'm mindful that we're talking about trial when I say that today. But the concept here is that divorce doesn't have to just be an ending. It can be a decision to build something better. And our job as attorneys is to give people the strategy they need and the clarity they need to do exactly that for themselves. I actually started out in big law, corporate litigation, large scale things. And the numbers were really, really big, but it didn't matter as deeply to me as the work we do in family law does now, because it's a much larger impact on a person's actual life and future. So that's why divorce and family law.
Thank you so much. And I totally agree with you because it's not the end of your life. And Frank, you know, can really be the beginning, like a whole new beginning, if you want to look at it that way.
Right.
And all right, so let's dive right in. So,
get it.
Because trial is not in reality, right, what we see on TV. You know, I'm a Law and Order junkie, so I watch it all the time. However, our cases really never wrap up in 50 minutes, you know, right? From crime
to
trial.
They also don't start in 10.
No. So, let's talk about that. You know, and especially from your perspective, because I love talking about the way things are different in different states. And, you know, when do you get to trial? How do you get all the way to trial?
So in Connecticut, we probably get trial dates, let's call it pretty much a year, with their exceptions, but pretty much a year after you first file your divorce is when you could even think of having a trial. And that is not even starting to mention the fact that there can be continuances and delays before the trial actually starts. So you're really looking at a long period between when you start the divorce and when you wind up at trial. And that's the good news and the bad news, right? It sounds initially like, oh my goodness, that's a really long wait. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, all of that time between when you start and the trial is an opportunity to learn more about your soon-to-be ex-spouse's case. It's an opportunity to resolve things outside of court so that you don't get to a trial. it's an opportunity to do your own preparation so that if you do wind up at a trial, you and your lawyer are fully aligned on the same page and ready to go. So I don't think that the timeline, although long, is the worst thing in all situations.
And so you're saying that, you know, really, even when filing, if like, say we filed today and I was like, Megan, I have all the financials. I know everything about the case. When can you get me a trial date? You're saying they're so packed, 12 months.
Yeah,
is what we're looking at. Wow.
And that's if nobody's on vacation or has a sick kid, right?
Right,
yeah, it's
right.
A long haul.
Wow, that's really interesting because ours, it probably is close to that amount of time, but not because of the courts, just more us saying we need to do all these other things first.
So, one of the things that happens here, and I don't know if this happens with you guys, and that, of course, we don't have the mediation stage that Florida has, but, and I'd love to talk about that a little because I'm fascinated by how different states do that, but one of the things that happens for us too is that if we'll see judges, if two spouses don't have lawyers, they'll get trial dates sooner. And not because the trial is necessarily going forward, but I think it's one of those things that the court can use to say, hey, you all, it's serious here. Go get lawyers. Right. And then when lawyers come in, the work will start to get done. The financials will start to get gathered. Depositions will happen, et cetera. And the trial dates will get pushed out.
Which, yeah, then makes sense, right? So that you have all the information you need. And mostly the judge, like, I need the information if I'm going to make a decision.
Right.
Now, and I agree on the mediation. It's not required.
Oh, it's
in
not.
Connecticut. No, in Connecticut, it's not, right? You don't have
the mediation. No, not. It's not required, which is too bad.
Mm-hmm.
We have things like pretrials to help people settle things. The court is involved in helping people settle. But I think what happens in Florida is brilliant. We actually see in some of the cases in Connecticut, and this is more often the higher conflict, likely to go to trial, and higher asset. Mm-hmm. Complex cases that we'll bring in a retired family court judge to mediate before we go to trial. So close to trial, but as a sort of let's play all in on this and see if we can resolve this with a retired judge as the mediator. But again, completely optional and relatively rare compared to the number of cases in Connecticut.
Wow. So, right, because everybody would have to agree.
Right.
And so some folks maybe are like, we don't want to go to mediation. It's not going to work.
Right. It's not going to work. Or we don't want to pay the mediator on top of our lawyers if we're going to trial anyway. Mm-hmm. And the problem with that, it's a rational, understandable reaction. In practice, when you've seen a lot of divorces, one of the things we know is that these mediations have a very high success rate. I mean, in our firm, I put it north of 95% of the times we do it, it does resolve the case. One of the things, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, as we're talking about trial generally, but clients are trying to figure out what's penny wise and what's pound foolish. Where do I invest in to maximize my investment in legal fees? Is it on something like one of these mediations, or should I just go to trial? And in a lot of cases, the investment, the financial and time investment in going through mediation does resolve the case, which is why I love the Florida model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's in my experience, the cases that you think this will never settle, it does. And in cases you're like, this should settle, but it doesn't because people are people and emotions get involved. And I think the thing that is, you know, really important is that in a trial, the judge, you know, all our issues, you know, and I mean, really, most of the time we only get one day and that's 8 hours. And you have got to do so much in that short amount of time, which, you know, somebody who doesn't do this, like, well, 8 hours, you're like, no, you don't understand. Like, it's like takes an hour for everybody to introduce themselves and get in. And then, everybody needs bathroom breaks and breaks. And all of a sudden you're like, it's 5 o'clock and we're not where we need to be.
Right.
It goes so fast.
And I think that one of the things that's so hard about that, for clients also is that one of the things I've been saying lately is that family court isn't like an emotional justice court. It's a legal justice court. But when it's your divorce, when it's your relationship, that's a really hard and confusing concept. Mm-hmm. So when you think about how long for you actually have for the trial, 8 hours, 16 hours over the course of 2 days, one of the things you're thinking about is like, what can you actually talk about during that time? So not only does it go like that, but a lawyer has to really prioritize the things that will be most impactful that the judge has authority over, right? Mm-hmm. The decisions that a judge can make that are actually realizable. And there are some hard cuts to make, you know, on what do we actually invest our time on.
Absolutely. And what exhibits, you know, what documents that are going to make the most sense in the time that you have. Right. But let's talk about now, okay, because we touched on mediation. We have to do it here in Florida. Everybody really should do it. But sometimes, like, it just doesn't settle. So we have to go to trial. Like, when we have to go to trial, what are some of the cases where you've seen? It's just like it's inevitable.
Oh, yeah. So I've seen that for sure, what you were referring to before, that the cases that on paper should settle, right? Mm-hmm. And when we say they should settle, what we mean is there isn't anything extremely complex. The parties aren't that far apart. But those aren't always the cases that resolve. Sometimes people resolve super complex cases. And in other times, relatively straightforward cases wind up in trial. And I think I've seen some issues, right, where there are certain types of things, for example, when there is extreme substance abuse issues, mental health issues, things like that, where you really can't negotiate because someone's not really able to engage in the process, right? That might go to trial. But I think that what we talk to our clients about is an issue that I, Megan, might try a case over may not be an issue that you, Heather, try a case over. And I'm not talking about Megan and Heather as attorneys. I'm talking about us as litigants, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. As people. So it's like, how do you prioritize your money in terms of the investment in legal fees and expert fees and all of that, and your control over the outcome. So one person might say, I just can't handle it if I don't have this parenting plan that I really want. Mm-hmm. And for another person, that same parenting plan might be their preference, but not so important that they're willing to go through the unpredictability of a trial or the expense of a trial or things like that. Yeah. So it's really that hierarchy. It's not so much about who's litigious and who isn't. It's really about knowing what matters most to you when you weigh these competing factors.
And I think that is such a good point. One of the things, though, that in my experience is that one side is just completely unreasonable.
Yeah.
And those were like back in the day when I was always going to trial, because I was not the most agreeable attorney, I will tell you.
Yeah.
I wasn't settling a bunch of cases. I was like, we're going to trial.
Let's do this.
Let's just do it. Because though, you know, and especially from the standpoint of representing women, that the husbands would be like, I'm not paying alimony. It's like, no, you are. Like, the law is very supportive. And there are just some individuals, and we want to believe that their attorneys told them, like, the law, but they were just like, and these are cases, we don't have permanent alimony in Florida anymore, but we did. And those were most of the cases that I took to trial. And I won because I, you know, understood that. And I always wonder, okay, is it that the husband was just like, I don't care, judge is going to have to tell me.
Right.
Even when their attorney was like, no, like, you are going to have to do this.
Lose.
I always wonder, right? Like, yeah. But either way, and it's like, you know, fortunately for our clients, they did listen to us because we're like, no, this is not a deal you can take, right? Because we have to go to mediation. So we are aware of, like, you know, where is that? What are we walking away from? Which is so hard for many people, you know, for many of our clients, because they just are like, what if this is the best deal?
Right.
Right. And so they really have to rely on their lawyer to say, no, based on the facts, the law, this, you can't accept this.
We don't have an option.
We have to go to trial.
We've had, I would say, larger percentage of our trials these days are falling into that category where there is not a deal on the table that is anywhere close to approaching how well you will do at trial.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. the likely outcome of a trial is so much better than the last offer on the table. And, you know, we just had a big alimony one, by the way. So it's like, it's similar to what you're saying. There is just not a reasonable offer on the table. And when we say reasonable, when lawyers talk about reasonable, I think it makes sense to say for your listeners, Heather, that like, we're talking about reasonable based in reality, right? The reality of what a judge is likely to do. So when you're deciding to go to trial, if your lawyer is saying, listen, you're going to do better at trial, look at this holistically and see, you know, I'm not going to give you 100%. This is exactly what the orders are going to be, but I can give you a pretty good range, right?
Yeah.
Compare that to the offer and it starts to tell you what direction to take. There's also the flip side of that, right? Mm-hmm. Say your opposing counsel in the case that you mentioned, who has the client who's saying, I'm not paying her alimony. And the lawyer is trying to explain to that husband, yeah, you are. Right? The judge is going to order it. Did that client make a good decision for themselves to go to trial anyway? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're just a person that needs to hear it from a judge. I don't know. But that's, for me, I like to have the client that is, I really think, is accepting the reality either way of what we're telling them. And look, if it makes clients feel better to get a second opinion so that they have a gut check on the advice their lawyer is giving, that's fine too, right? You're not looking, don't go shopping for a different answer. You're just making sure you understand the answer you got from your own attorney.
Yeah, because it is, you know, again, it's the unknown. And because now we're going to put all of these decisions, we've got these issues we can't come to terms with, and we're putting them in front of the court. And, you know, the money is one thing. I find those, they can be complex, but in the grand scheme of things, they're generally simple and we can figure out a range because we know what the money shows with the records. It's the children, the time sharing and custody issues that I think are really, really challenging, because if you really believe that they are being harmed or, you know, it's not in their best interest, and now that's going to be a very lengthy trial because we are going to have a lot of other witnesses, because it can't be just he said, she said, or she said, she, you know, it can't be just what you say as the parents. Yeah. We need other witnesses. We need experts. So now the time and expense is huge, but most people are like, but they're my kids. What else am I going to do?
Right. What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And those are some of the hardest trials.
They are, because they're so fact specific, and that's what you got to pull out, all of the facts, and then tie them back in with the law for the court. And then we just have an individual making a decision, right? And we've all been, you know, and I think that's important for our listeners, right? One, you've lived it. It's your whole world as your attorneys. Mm-hmm. We've probably been working on this with you at least a year and more. And we have taken deposition. You know, we've worked with all of these experts. So we're in it too. And we are, and now, like you said at the beginning of the show, Megan, we've got to condense it in the time that we're allowed before the judge to make sure we have the most compelling, the most persuasive evidence in front of them. And yet we're still in front of a human being. And the other side is, you know, doing their best too. And that is scary, because you really don't know what they're going to decide.
You don't. And it's scary. And The whole concept of it is scary, of course, because someone that doesn't know you in this very, very condensed period of time, right? Mm-hmm. With all of these rules of what you can talk about when and how.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about that part yet. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Like there's a lot of structure around this.
Yeah.
Then that person makes a decision about your life. And one of the things I think it's also important for people to know is that in Connecticut, at least, I don't know how Florida is, you don't know when you're getting that decision. So there can be an additional wait post-trial, like at the end of your trial, it's like, okay, now when am I going to get the judge's actual ruling? And it can be a while. And so that limbo isn't very appealing for a lot of people either.
No, I already am going to get started because it drives me insane because like here we have people who are clearly in turmoil and it is very stressful and they have spent so much money and so much time and they got their day in court. And I mean, we've had horrific cases where a judge didn't make a decision for over 6 months. And that to me should not be allowed. Often what we find, and it still takes them a while, just this is for our listeners, because you're like, okay, I gave you all this money. We spent all this time in court. And then now we're like, hey, now the judge said, I've got to submit to them what I think they should do. And they make both lawyers do that. Even though we've been ingrained, like that takes a long time. That takes can take 4 to 5 hours to draft, which I know seems mind-boggling, but we don't want to leave anything out. And then we, in order, you know, to draft something and condense it all into a form that we're hoping the judge is going to read and be like, yeah, I agree with this. I don't. I think for most like human beings, most humans, like they'd be like, what is that? Like that makes no sense to me. Right. When I say it out loud, it doesn't make any sense to me. Right. Because we've all watched all the shows, even, you know, and most of the shows that are of interest to everybody are criminal. So then you have a jury just says something and you get, boom, a decision. But you don't get a decision, which is really hard for people.
You don't. You don't get a decision. And then I think, and this is another thing that our shows, right, it can mislead us about a little bit too, is if you don't like the decision, what are your options? And I think most people assume, well, if I don't like the decision, I can appeal it. And that's true and not true, because what our appellate level courts can review and perhaps agree with or toss out is very limited. So what that trial court judge decided at your divorce trial, that's sticky. That is a sticky decision. And so you're probably in for a penny, in for a pound. I'm only doing money analogies today, Heather. You are probably going to be pretty much living under that ruling for at least a period of time, unless something substantially changes in Connecticut. The appeal isn't a second bite at the apple. And I think that's one of the things that can also be confusing.
Right. And it's in the same in Florida because then we, you know, and we don't really do appeals because they're so specific. But I also think that we just talked about, right? We've been ingrained in this case for so long and we see it in such a way, which I think is good, right? That's what you want your lawyer to do, right? You want to be... It, you know, we do sometimes, I think you need an outside person, right? I mean, there are some that are clear cut, like, and I've had cases and I was like, that's appealable. He wrote that the wrong way. And I'm telling you, it gets reversed, but that's a whole nother time and money commitment.
It is.
And anyway, we really try to, you know, and I think that that falls on the judges often. And they make a decision. And again, I agree with you. The Florida court, they're going to be more inclined to, you know, affirm and agree with the court below. So it's, you certainly don't want to go into a divorce trial thinking, I'll just appeal it if I don't like it. Because that's not...
Bad plan.
It's a not bad a good plan. Plan. That's a bad plan. So, and I think what I, you know, I'm hoping our listeners get out of this is one, we're going to talk about how to, you know you have effective representation or, you know, how to prepare, but trial is a lot. As attorneys, we generally do most of our attorneys, like, we want to go to trial. We want to advocate for our client, but we have to be so clear as to the risk-benefit analysis. And that's right. Where, you know, we ask our clients, like, you have got to be a part of this. You have got to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I'll advise you, you have to make a decision, because this right. is your life, right? And those are tough decisions.
It is tough. It's a really tough decision. And we've had cases that we were desperate to try, and the client ultimately decided to settle. And we've also had cases where we thought the case should resolve and our client wanted to try it. And in either case, for us, you know, one of the things that I think of when we're talking about things like the advice that you give the client when you're sharing the good, bad, and the ugly, and then what you do when you're actually in the courtroom is, do you remember when in my little hometown in Wilbraham, Massachusetts, where I grew up, which is sort of like a classic New England town, white church on the green kind of situation, and the town attorney, because I believe that there was one, and also a town doctor, had a sign outside his office that said, attorney and counselor at law. And I think that can be really helpful for people, because when we're counseling our client, we're doing our counselor at law thing,
yeah.
where we're telling you the pros and cons, helping you make a decision. Mm-hmm. But when we put on our suits and go to court, we're that advocate, right? We're being the attorney advocate. So either way is fine, right? It's whether or not you're taking a case to trial that's or is more clear cut. We've got you. We're there for you. But as part of having you, we really need to have those in serious discussions where we give you the counsel you need to make the best decisions.
Yeah. And I think that's important. And so when we talk about, let's talk about like how you prepare and how do you know, you know, if your attorney, if you're receiving effective representation.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is, you know, and not that we don't, hey, we all want to hear what we want to hear, right? We're going to hear mm-hmm. what we want to hear anyway, but even no matter what they say. But I think as, you know, as a client, and most of our clients, they've never been a client before.
Right.
And certainly not like of all the things that matter most to them, right? Their families, their livelihood, money, like, and so you need to, I think one of the things is know, like, do I feel like they are delivering me the hard news too? Because it's not always sunshine and rainbows. And if that's all you're getting, I think you should question that, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also think that one reality for listeners is that people get a little bit nervous on the eve of trial, very natural. And sometimes we have clients who've left other lawyers who come to us when it becomes clear that something's headed to trial, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so usually one of the things that will happen is either what you said, Heather, that they really, it was making them nervous that their lawyer seemed so casual about it.
Okay, right.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the idea that you shouldn't be directing trial strategy, right? Like we started our conversation with saying we have a finite amount of time and we have to be really, really strategic about what we get in. And it has to be impactful for what will matter to you most in the long term.
Right.
And so it's rooted in your goals, what matters to you most in the long term for your future. But how we accomplish that, once it's trial time, a lot of responsibility has to shift to the lawyer on how to execute that.
Yeah.
And I think if you feel like you have a lawyer who's taking dictation rather than driving strategy and sharing with you and giving you options, you probably aren't with the best fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, right? Yeah, because you're absolutely right. I like how you said that, right? You tell us what you want. And sometimes you'll be like, okay, that's probably not happening. And, or this is very likely, but then we got to tell you how to get there. Like once we get to trial, you know, you have to be in such a position that you have the trust of your attorney.
Yes.
And that really is not, this is not the time to be questioning that, right? Like that happens way back when, But, you know, let's talk about like some of the things that we think attorneys should prepare the clients for so they know, like, how do we prepare them? How do you like, what do you think are some of the most important things?
Okay. So we talked about one of them. On the final day of the trial, you're probably not getting any orders, right?
Right, I think
that's important to know. I think it's really important to know that appealing isn't a panacea, right? Not every issue can be appealed. We've got to go for broke. Like, this is it. That has to be our approach to the trial. There's not a second chance. I think that people really have to be prepared for the formality of the courtroom also, and how it can feel very limiting. Your attorney is operating in a tight timeline, and they're operating under the rules of evidence. And there are also strategic plays about that we make a sort of game day decisions. For example, I don't think that people necessarily know why their lawyer isn't objecting to something that sounds like it might be hearsay. And the answer may be that maybe they're objecting to preserve the record for an appeal. Maybe they're objecting to make sure that the judge gets that they understand what's happening. But in other cases, sometimes we don't make every objection if we see a judge getting a little bit frustrated with the pacing, right? Yeah. So part of this is a experienced read of the room by your attorney who knows the game. And that may lead to the biggest thing of all that I think people need to be prepared for to be effectively, you know, confident going into trial. And that is that something will happen that wasn't predicted. You can predict that something unpredictable will happen. It's part of the deal. And that doesn't mean that anything is wrong. It's just the reality of all these humans in a room together. It's that things happen, and you have to feel like your lawyer understands that and has you anyway.
Exactly. And there's very few. Now, I have had them. Very few and far between, you know, where there is that aha, gotcha. Okay, it doesn't happen.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't happen. You wish it did. Like, we all love that if it really does, but it doesn't. It doesn't. It's pretty predictable. But I think exactly what you were saying, that trust in your attorney, because you can be in a situation – and when you understand the players and you know where you are, like, I'm like, I'm winning. Like, we got this. Right. Like, and he's ready for me to stop talking. Like, we are good.
Gotta end it.
You gotta know, right, when to stop talking, because we got this. We could ruin it if we go any further, but that's that being efficient with the time in reading them. And I know sometimes clients are like, no, but I wanted to say this. It's like, we already got it. Like, I know he gets it. We got it. So that can be hard for our clients to understand in the moment.
Yeah, because there's always a risk on this timeline when the judge is the decision maker and that person's opinion really, really is the most crucial one in the room, right?
Yes.
For what the outcome is. And so if you don't want to beat a horse dead, you want to move on to the next most important thing.
I agree. Now, and I think what I wanted to just like dig into a little bit more, because, you know, when you talked about the formality of the courtroom, and that's where it can be so hard for clients to, like, they envision it, but it's just really from TV and movies. And so maybe it's not that formal. So with our family law courtrooms, just for our listeners, and this freaked me out when I first started practicing family law, because I had come from the criminal side, which is the bench, a jury box, and two separate tables. Like, heaven forbid, we would never, as prosecutors, sit next to defense attorneys, right? Well, right? Because we had two tables, just like in the movies. But what we have now, because it's, you know, everybody's supposed to get along, where criminal cases, people get along way more than in family law cases, it's one long table. And so our client, you got to look at them the entire time. So we don't
have two tables.
We don't have two tables. And I really wish we did. We used to have, sometimes we could be in a courtroom, but the judges want it in their hearing rooms. So the judge is at the head of the table, just like your big formal law
mediation, really.
Table.
Yeah.
Well, and And then, you know, so then I have to tell clients, like, you got to look at him the whole time. So you better, this is like game day face. Like, no eye rolling, no smirking. The judge is going to pick up on every single thing because he's not that far away from you.
No, that's intimate. We have, we're in a formal courtroom.
That's
so fair. Judges on a dais, plaintiff and defendant, litigants are in front of the bar at their own separate tables. Witnesses are in a box.
And so actually, I say that is the one courthouse, which is the majority of them. We have a couple other courthouses where it is in a courtroom. And I think that helps because you feel the formality. The judge is in a robe, you know, up high. Like it's
right.
Feels like very formal. Like I can't act out and like laugh when somebody says something. Like, yeah, that's never any good, right? Yeah.
No. And neither is gum chewing. Don't do that either.
Oh, don't do the gum chewing. Yeah. The and also this is something that I don't think our clients really understand. Like when you're, and this goes for even in a hearing. So, but anytime you're in front of the judge and there's something going on, you know, what you have to understand as a client is you have to wait to be asked questions.
Right.
You can't offer, you can't say, but judge, can I tell you this? Oh my God. Most of the judges get really upset if you do that. But also, if they're trying to talk to their lawyer, during something, because I think they kind of just want to lean over and whisper, which it's never that quiet, but you know, as a lawyer, I've always explained it like I am, you know, asking questions, but then I got to listen to what is being said.
Right.
Think of what I'm going to say next, as well as like what objections. So it's like three things going on at one time. And if you are trying to interrupt, you're really hampering your case so much.
Yeah. Like take a note.
I know. And I gave them sticky notes. Sometimes the sticky notes get overwhelming, but it's good. They need a paper and just write down everything you're thinking because you can't say it. And then that gives you something to do because it's really, again, it's very unnatural. It's very unnatural, to be in that proceeding and then to not always be able to say exactly what you want because, right, like, You know, we're not going to go into a whole like what evidence means and all that, but like you just can't say whatever you want. And oh, you know, but he told me or she told me this, and then I saw this or that. Like it's just not always what you would
know. No, and that must be very confusing when you're in one of the courtrooms that you described where it's more like a table. A table feels more like a conference where I might be able to say, that's not actually what happened.
I mean, you can reach across and like, you know, touch the other person sometime. Like, it's very, it can be, I don't know. Nobody asked me though, right? Like it's been this way in this jurisdiction for a long time, but I was just like, wow, we got to be really close to everybody.
Right.
So it's tough, but that's part of the preparation, right? And so that's something else for, you know, your listeners.
Yes.
Ask your lawyer, what is it going to be like? Even for like, sometimes we have, you know, you were saying you have the pretrial. So sometimes we have something that's very procedural and not a big deal. You should ask your attorney. They should be telling you what that situation will be like, right? Mm-hmm. You just want to know, because if you have an expectation that's so off, you're just going to feel confused and you're going to feel like, I wasn't prepared, and nobody wants to feel like that.
No. And I think one of the things that can be confusing, I don't know if you all have anything like this, but we have a court date that happens early on in the case. It's called the resolution plan date. And it basically tells the court, the court's essentially triaging it to figure out what level of conflict there's going to be, how many, is there going to be a trial? Is it likely to resolve? Things like that. And at that court date, we never know if we might be able to get a hearing on an issue that's relevant while the divorce is pending. Mm-hmm. It completely depends on the court schedule that day, who else is in there. It is so far from guaranteed that it's almost never going to happen, except for then it does.
And then like you have to really prepare, don't like, want it to happen. When the other side really wants something, you're like, oh, no, we don't have time for that, right?
Right. And so that's part of the advocacy that the attorney is doing, right? If we like the status quo, we're trying to not have time for that hearing. Yes. If we don't like the status quo and we don't want to wait a month or 2 months for that hearing on that issue, we're pushing for it. So All of that is why it matters so much whether or not the lawyers you're working with are used to the courtroom, are used to the judges, are used to these idiosyncrasies, and are really strategic people who can at least try to push it in the direction that is towards your goal.
Yeah. And I think that's so important because just what you said this earlier, you know, oftentimes, you know, clients have invested a lot of time and money with an attorney and then they're all like, this isn't the one for me. And, you know, they come to our firms and we're like, all right, well, like, I can't tell you yes or no, right? Just based on this, but like, we're going to have to get all caught up and we're going to have
to do it.
We have to do it. And yeah. And that's challenging. I hate that for clients, right? And I hate it for clients when they ended up like, they felt like they weren't well represented or got a bad decision. And sometimes it does come down to like, the judge doesn't like you. Like it is clear that you got to change and we got to try to settle. Like, because something has happened and us trying to change that is probably near impossible. And it's not fair, but it happened.
This is a thing. And I think it goes back to your earlier point when we were talking about like, what's persuasive evidence, right? Sometimes the text message that your spouse sent you that just was the thing that you couldn't believe came out of their face, right, isn't as compelling to the court because of what you said before or how you reacted or whatever. So it's not always, it does matter that you're likable. It really does. And it can be hard if you've been before a judge in the past and now we're sitting in front of that judge for trial. It's hard to reform that reputation. And it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. It's just, again, this is a person making big decisions about your life that doesn't know you and is meeting you in these really strange and small snippets.
Which then, you know, you talked about the text messages, but also, you know, when it's hard, like you're already going through this and you're like, well, I did all this stuff, you know, last year, but you know, everybody has an internal, like, you know, the little like devil angel, like, you know, when something you went too far, right? Like we do know everybody has got that somewhere, but you sometimes just like, I hate him so much, or he's so awful, I'm doing it anyway. Well, that's the stuff sometimes that really burns you. And Lord knows, don't leave voicemail. I mean,
don't do that.
Hey, I love nothing more than a good voicemail that your ex or husband left that really, because that tone and that play, that puts a judge, man, they're like, now we got him. But I certainly hate it when it's our clients. And, you know, for any listeners, just be mindful of that, because what happens is in a divorce, whether it's the hearing or the full trial, like so many things that would be explainable aren't because it's like this microscope. It's like these things that give a judge who doesn't know you or your family or any, you know, only what we're able to get in front of them is making a decision. And that really is going to affect their perception of you. And really, like, what kind of decisions you make in the heat of the moment and how you behave. And it can be so harmful. So I really, you know, for all our listeners, right, we just want them to just stop. Like, don't press send on that message. Don't leave that voicemail, because that is awful when that comes back and really taints you in a way that is probably unfair.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that can be very confusing also is, so if we're talking about things like parenting and custody and the court is looking at what's in the best interest of the child, right? That's the standard we use in Connecticut. Yes. I imagine Florida is somewhat similar. And what each parent's perception of what's in a child's best interest can be radically different. And then the judge's perception can be a third thing entirely. And so part of this counseling, part of the counselor at law part, when you know whether or not you're with the right attorney, is, so for example, say you have one parent who wants to parent with a sort of, I think of like the best possible food, right? No McDonald's, organic only, right? That is one parent's perception. Yeah. And the other parent is a little bit more casual about it. It's more about the quality of time we spend together rather than what we're doing during that time. And both people can really think they're right. And a judge is not looking at the best possible, most ideal parenting zero-sum game, right? Win or lose. It's really something entirely different, where they want to make sure that children have happy, healthy relationships with both parents to the extent possible, if possible, right? And so that can be confusing too, because when we're doing a custody trial on these issues, but it's something falling below a safety concern.
Yeah.
It can be really upsetting that a judge doesn't want what you really feel like is best for your child.
And they don't agree with you. I know. And it's tough. It is because sometimes those issues, they have a lot of emotions attached to them.
A lot.
As do, you know, I mean, they're your children. I get it, right? Of course you do, but it's tough. And I think all of this to say is, you know, there are times when you are just going to have to try a case.
Yep. And
no doubt about it.
And sometimes it's easy to make that decision.
Yes.
And that is wonderful. Like, you wish you didn't have to make the decision. You wish it weren't that way. You wish the two of you could find a common ground. But when you can't, and things are like, what will likely happen at trial versus what they're offering is so far off, time to go.
Yeah, agreed. And so it's one of these things, I think, you know, obviously the more you know, the better, and to be prepared and also to understand that, you know, we give it our, you know, we give you our odds and we tell you where we think it's going to end and, you know, the biggest issues, right, for the judge. But sometimes they really do just split the baby and
Yeah, and
they do. And they're like, y'all are going to have so much trouble anyway. And this is just what I'm doing because you'll probably be back again. And again.
I know. And that's the worst part. I mean, that part's hard because one of the things we see in Connecticut, I don't know if you see this, Heather. And again, it takes both parents to play
right.
in, right? They both need to be able to be reasonable and flexible enough to get this done.
Yes,
but
right.
we do see that the agreements that result from something like a mediation tend to be more comprehensive than a judge's orders. And I think that can be like, really, it can really help you avoid litigation downstream, right? It's not just that the two of you are more reasonable people. That's it. Maybe you are, maybe you aren't, right? It's that the agreement that you have is able to anticipate more than a judge can do based upon what you presented in a really quick trial. It's just not going to be as...
And most of the judges aren't going to do it. They're like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get that specific. They won't. Yeah.
And they don't know enough to.
True.
Right?
True.
I mean, they can't figure the nuances of like, the exact perfect pickup time, like you can if you're really trying to figure it out around a negotiation table.
Right. So, you know, I think that was so helpful. It's been a great conversation because, you know, so many people, they know it's coming up and they don't know what to do. But Megan, before we go, our show, as you know, is called Women Winning Divorce. So I'd love to know, what does winning at life mean to you?
Winning at life means to me building a life that's truly yours. You don't need to check boxes. You don't need to keep other people comfortable. You don't need to do what other people think you should do or feel how other people think you should feel. You get to make bold and, yes, sometimes very hard decisions when you know that something in your life needs to change. Winning is picking your own course.
Thank you. And lastly, Megan, where can our listeners find you for more information and resources?
Yes. So we are at freedmarcroft.com. It's FreedMarcroft, F as in Frank, T as in Tom.com. I'm Megan Freed. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. If you Google my name, you'll find me very active on LinkedIn, but we would love to answer any questions for folks that are in Connecticut or really anywhere else, as long as it's not specific legal thing. We'd love to help you find a lawyer in your home state.
Well, thank you so much. We've reached the end of our show today, and I appreciate you so much, Megan, for joining us today and to discuss what really actually happens in a divorce trial, how to prepare emotionally and strategically, and how women can stay empowered in one of the most intimidating phases of the legal process. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Heather. I appreciate it.
Listeners, if you or someone you know in the Northeast Florida area is going through or even thinking about divorce, you're not alone. Taking that first step can feel overwhelming, but it doesn't have to be. Our newsletter is filled with actionable advice tailored to guide you through this process. By signing up, you'll gain the tools to face the unknown with courage and see if we're the right fit to support you during this life-changing time. Don't wait. Click the link in the show notes, fill out the form, and take the first step toward building a brighter future today.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not an advertisement for legal services. The information provided on this podcast is not intended to be legal advice. If you have a legal issue, please contact an attorney in your local jurisdiction. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are solely those of the individuals and do not represent the views or opinions of the firms or organizations with which they are affiliated. This podcast is available for private, non-commercial use only. Any editing, reproduction, or redistribution of this podcast for commercial use or monetary gain without the expressed written consent of the podcast's creator is prohibited.